Grammys are this weekend. And the most anticipated part of music's biggest night is the announcement of one of the night's biggest awards. 8 artists, including Taylor Swift and Post Malone, are in the running for Album of the Year. And one artist on the list you may or may not have heard of is Jacob Collier. There's a funky feeling in my bones, in my bones, in my bones. I got that funky feeling. The 26-year-old from England has been called a lot of things. A music phenom, a jazz prodigy. Well, now this year, Collier is also a 3-time Grammy-nominated artist for his 2020 album titled Jesse, Volume 3. And Jacob Collier joins us now. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. This is awesome.
Yes. So you're not new to the Grammy-winning club. You've got 2 from 2017 and another 2 last year, all for Best Arrangements. But this year, you're up for one of the biggest awards of the night, as I said. How does that feel?
It feels utterly surreal, if I'm being completely honest. It feels like a kind of change in the waters, I suppose. And it's never something I ever really imagined. You know, I've always focused on making music that I want to hear and makes me happy. And I've been sponging up all sorts of different musical influences and different sounds and genres from all over the world since I was very, very small. My dream was, imagine how colourful it could sound, how joyous it could sound. And so I think that I really focused my energy on the creating of the music. And I almost started having a music career by accident because I started to share these worlds, these sounds I was making online. And the whole thing kind of picked up steam. But honestly, an Album of the Year nomination is bananas. But it's very, very exciting.
Yeah. Well, let's get to your music. Jesse, Volume 3 is the third part of a 4-part work. And the collection has been described as representing different parts of the day. So which part of the day is Volume 3?
Yeah, I guess I started dreaming up this quadruple album about 2 years ago or so. And my goal was really to make these 4 different spaces within which different sort of genres, different sound worlds could be explored. And so Jesse Volume 1 is the first volume, which is very vast, I suppose, almost orchestral, you could say. And there are orchestral musicians on that record too, and choirs and things like that. And then Jesse Volume 2 is more of a sort of a folk space. I like to think of it as a smaller acoustic space where songs can live. And then what Jesse Volume 3 was always very exciting to me about was the fact that it was going to explore some of the more electronic sounds, digital manipulation within the pop sphere or the R&B sphere. And then Jesse Volume 4 was this kind of blank that I left until this moment where I get to kind of figure out what's important to me enough to put on the album. And one of the challenges and joys throughout the creation process as the producer of the album and the composer and stuff has been to work with so many of my favorite musicians on the planet. There's about 30 or 40 collaborators spread across all 4 albums, from choirs and orchestras to Northumbrian pipes players to rock guitar legends to R&B singers, hip-hop artists, rappers and trappers and folk fiddlers. And I've always been a bit of a shapeshifter, and I've enjoyed the process of seeing these ideas come to life over the last few years.
Okay, we've got to get to your shape-shifting, but we also need to just take people through a journey of Jesse Volume 3 with a couple of pieces. Let's start with Time Alone With You, featuring Daniel Caesar. Stop right, shines down on me. So good, so bright, you're all I see. And from here, we're going to go right into Sleeping on My Dreams. Don't think I'm lost without your wings. I've been sleeping on my dreams.
So I imagine we were playing a game. Something like you could be an animal.
And now let's go to All I Need, featuring Mahalia and Ty Dolla $ign, which earned you a nomination for Best R&B Performance. Cause every time I think about it, can't stop thinking about it. Can't stop thinking. You were all I need. I mean, come on. This music is so joyful. I heard some neo-soul, some electric R&B, a little jazz, some pop. There's a lot of risk-taking and genre bending that you do. How do you know when you've created the perfect balance in a song?
I like to follow my goosebumps. When I get goosebumps, I feel like I've done something right. And in some ways, you can overthink very easily what's good. And everybody, no matter who you are, everyone's going to have a different version of what good is. And you know, for artists now in the 21st century, with the amount that's possible within music, I think one of the challenges is how do you fit together a sort of mosaic that feels the best to you? Because if music feels the best to you as an artist, then you've kind of done as much as you can. And so I guess for me, you know, I've been amassing all these different flavors for quite some time. And in the creation of them, I begin to understand them slightly better.
Your first shot into the musical stage, you brought this up, was through social media back in 2013. You were just 19 years old and you posted a video on YouTube of yourself performing your own arrangement of an all-time favorite Stevie Wonder song. Let's listen. Don't you worry about a thing. Don't you worry about a thing, baby, 'cause I'll be standing on the side when you're checking out. And this was a game changer for you because it got a lot of attention of some of the most iconic names in music. Tell us what happened.
Well, I'd been making YouTube videos for about a year or two by that point, and I'd fallen in love with this process of arranging, which is basically where you take a song that exists already, and then you kind of twist it up and make it into something that is brand new. And it was a really crazy moment because I put this cover up, and the next day, you know, it had about 100,000 views, and I had emails from so many of my heroes, you know, people like Quincy Jones and Herbie Hancock, and my mind was just completely blown. It was kind of the first time I'd ever experienced anything like that. And it really came out of the blue.
I can just imagine how you felt. I mean, you're sitting at your computer and you get a message from Quincy Jones.
I know. Are you kidding me? It's wild.
Yeah. He actually said, he told Billboard, it was apparent that this kid's understanding of music theory, melody, harmony, and improvisation was exactly where it needed to be. What a huge compliment. I mean, what have you learned from him?
He is such a maverick. And he's almost like a gentle giant to me. I think he's so focused on the human connection of music and what's possible when you bring people together from all over the world. And he often talks about the balance between science and soul, I suppose, and how to make sure that you kind of understand how these different ingredients fit together in high resolution as a musician so that you can whittle your creations using these forces that make sense, but also that there's a bunch of soul in it and that you bring yourself to that table. And, you know, you're not afraid to use your imperfections, your strangeness, your imagination, really to stretch that and to tell the most compelling stories that you can.
Artists like Quincy Jones, and really you, who shapeshift in this way, are pretty rare. How do you keep yourself whole? How do you keep yourself maybe unencumbered from the messages that you hear from the industry to be a certain way or to fit a certain category?
It's a really good question. I think that the music industry is one of many industries that has the kind of tendency to close people down a little bit and to make them containable. Because I think that when people are contained, they're a bit less of a threat, perhaps, you know, a bit more reasonable. But really, you know, I'm such a staunch non-believer in something like genre. I think genre makes it much easier for the music industry to talk about music and to sell it. But I actually think, you know, from a musician's perspective, genre doesn't help very much. It's a way of degrading something's infinity in a certain kind of way by saying, this is all this is. And actually, you know, I feel like we're in a bit of a shift within music, and it's the era of combining forces rather than defining forces. Mm. And I think within music, that feels very exciting to be somehow a part of.
And it seems that the audience is very excited by this proposition, too. It's why you're nominated for so many Grammys. As you mentioned, you're now working on this last installation of Jesse. Mm. Can you give us a little bit of a sneak peek on what we can expect from it?
Well, I can't say too much about who's on the album in terms of collaborators, but I am pretty excited about it. And yeah, working with all these musicians that I'm kind of just now coming to know as friends from all sorts of different parts of, especially pop music, actually. And, you know, bringing back the orchestra, bringing back the choirs, and it's going to feel a bit like a celebration of music as a whole, because after all, it is quite joyous that we're even alive at all. And I think if there's one way of really celebrating it in a way that collapses a lot of the borders that we like to put up between us as human beings a lot of the time, I think music can do that. I think it can reach into the hearts of people in a way that nothing else quite can. And I'm going to try and give myself as many goosebumps as possible. And I can't wait to take the show on the road and to see how the whole thing evolves over the next few years.
Oh, well, I can't wait to celebrate as well. Jacob Collier's latest album, Jesse Volume 3, is nominated for 3 Grammy Awards, including Album of the Year. Thank you so much for taking this time with us.
Thanks for having me. This has been a real pleasure.